No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. It is Tuesday night, neither after a Cardinals win nor loss, but rather the Tuesday after the bye weekend. And tonight should be a treat once we get the guys on. We've got Ben coming on with us. We've got Seth Cox joining us on the line here not too terribly long. And we've got a special show for you guys tonight because we won't be reviewing any game tonight. Nope. No game to worry about. No win, no loss. Nothing much to complain about. We do have a little bit of news on the way of the Arizona Cardinals that happened the past couple of days. But we're going to spend most of the show tonight talking about, well, midseason grades, and then the NFL draft, and that's, you probably will get a treat out of this one, and that's the fact that that's what I'm not going to talk a whole lot, because we're going to let the draft guys, we're going to let Seth and Ben handle that, since they are the ones that know their NFL draft stuff, especially the stuff coming up for next year. So we got Seth on the line. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. And we're just waiting for Ben to pop on now. And, well, we've had a couple of things happen in the way of news. A couple of things happened with the roster, and that is we have the addition of a new tight end in Jake Ballard. Guy coming off of ACL surgery from last season. Josh Weinfuss from ESPN, formerly of the Arizona AZCardinals.com, he actually reported a couple of weeks ago that he worked out for the Cardinals not too terribly long ago. But in the end, no contract was offered, no contract was signed, no terms were agreed to because they were concerned about his ability to hold up for the rest of the season. Obviously, something changed, and I think it has more to do with anything else, mostly because of the production at the tight end position. So the Cardinals have agreed to terms with Jake Ballard. He is now a member of the team, and rookie DC Jefferson was released. And he was not brought back to the practice squad after Kerry Taylor, who was on the practice squad and had a cup of coffee on the active roster before he was cut and brought back to the practice squad. He is now a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. DC Jefferson also, as Bruce Arians says, it is unrelated. The team says that they had made the decision to cut for to do the roster move to sign Ballard was on Friday. But did not announce the moves. However, Friday night, Jefferson was in Scottsdale, got arrested on DUI charges, which kind of flies in the face. Is kind of one of those not-so-smart moves, especially after the big deal Arians made before the team had their time off on the bye, saying, hey, don't be the guy that gets tased on South Beach. Don't be that guy. Don't let your team down. They don't need any distractions. So Jefferson's out. That means, looking back at the previous draft class that we had this year in 2013, sixth-round pick Ryan Swope retired. DC Jefferson released. They're getting production out of Andre Ellington, a lot of it, and they're getting great play from Tyrann Mathieu. And that's the other piece of news that we're gonna start with, as well as the Arizona Cardinals made a change to their depth charts. Now, we saw this in the lineup. We saw this on the playing field in their last game, but when Bruce Arians had Tyrann Mathieu starting at free safety in place of Rashad Johnson, that has apparently been made official now. The depth chart now reflects that Tyrann Mathieu is the starting free safety for the Arizona Cardinals, and Rashad Johnson moves into the backup role. Now, if I expect anything else to happen, what I expect to see as it was in a game against Atlanta, that Mathieu will play safety in base packages and in nickel packages and in dime packages as he has throughout the season, that he will move down and play nickel corner, that he will play the slot cornerback where he's actually had some really good play. And so those are the things. So we've got three things. Kerry Taylor poached by the Jaguars, interesting move because, well, obviously they needed a receiver after the suspension of Justin Blackmon. Then after that, it kind of is a timely move for them because Taylor, who has been with the team all season, they poach him just, you know, a week and a half before they play the Cardinals, something that is legal according to league rules, but I'm sure there was definitely more to it. It was about talent and about the team he was playing on. Kerry Taylor's out. He's now a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. DC Jefferson out. He's been released. And Jake Ballard, the newly signed tight end for the Arizona Cardinals. And in a related move today, they brought back former Arizona Wildcats receiver Dan Buckner to the practice squad. He spent a week on the practice squad earlier this season and was in training camp with the team. So, Seth, we'll go ahead and get started with this. What do you think about the move to bring in Ballard? Do you like the move? Do you love the move? Is it a meh move? What is your take on that?
I mean, basically at this point, they can't get much worse at the tight end position, so you know, it's a smart move to make. From the standpoint of that, where, you know, you haven't gotten a ton of production out of Hausler, Jim Dre's been a nice surprise, but he's more of a tight end. He's a fringe tight end too in your lineup, you know, probably more of a tight end, a third tight end on most teams. And, you know, so you bring in Ballard and hope that you can kind of catch lightning in the bottle for the last eight games of the season. As I kind of said with Eric Winston, when they signed him, you know, there's a reason these guys are available when they're available. Now, that's not to say that he can't come out and, you know, play well and stay healthy, but most of the time when a guy's available this late in the season, you know, so week eight, and hasn't signed with any team, and there are a lot of teams that need tight ends in this league, you know, it usually means that there's some question marks. You hope that those question marks don't really matter based on the other, you know, options being that the Cardinals really don't have anybody else at the tight end position that can be as dynamic as what Ballard was in 2011. So that, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with that is, you know, it's not a bad move because it can't be a bad move, but it's just a move and hopefully it works out.
And I'm of the same opinion when they made the move. It was interesting that 2 weeks ago they were concerned about his durability, but, you know, now that we're at half a season, and honestly, I like the move. I mean, there's nothing really to dislike about the move. Ballard has shown that he can perform at a pretty good level. He's the size that you want of a tight end. He's 6'6", 275. He's a guy that can block. He's a guy that can catch passes down the field. Obviously, the injury concern lingers, but it's half a season, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And like you said, and I wrote on the article this morning, I on revengeofthebirds.com that I put on there, that, you know, really, there's low risk. They haven't been getting anything from the tight end position anyway. Dre is a good guy to have on the team, but he's nothing spectacular. Hausler obviously has not performed up to expectations projections were, well, everyone was projecting him to be a fantasy stud this year. I can't remember if it was Arians or who else was said to be, but Carson Palmer, I think it was, who said that he should be able to catch 80 passes this season. I don't know if it was the injury that got him off track or he's just not the type of player that you want, but he just doesn't have the makeup for a big-time player. I think this move can do a couple of things. One is a guy like Ballard, if he produces at all, can take a lot of heat off of Hausler and perhaps give him, if they use him in the tight end two position, that it'll continue, that he'll get better looks and he'll be able to focus better and be able to produce more. As of right now on the depth chart, they show him listed behind, they have Ballard listed behind Hausler. They still got Dre and Hausler listed at the two starters at the tight end position with Sperry behind Dre and Ballard behind Hausler. Weinfuss, he said when they did the workout that originally that would mean Jim Dre would be pushed pretty much out of the offensive rotation and Hauser to a secondary position. But lately, in the past couple of games, it's been Dre that's been getting more playing time than Hausler. So it'll be interesting to see if and when Ballard starts, whose playing time he takes. And we've got Ben on the line. Thanks for coming on, Ben. How you doing tonight?
Hey, everybody. Good. Don't start without me.
So we've been talking about the move to bring in Ballard. What do you think of the move? Is it a good move, meh move? Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you hate it? You don't really care about it. What's your take?
I'm pretty happy about it. We weren't getting anything from Jefferson, at least, you know, not anytime soon. And Ballard was pretty good the last time he played, so hopefully he's healthy and ready to go.
And I found it, I found it kind of interesting. Bruce Arians was very quick in his press conference when he addressed the press on Monday to say that the arrest, that Jefferson's arrest didn't have anything to do with the decision to cut him. I wonder how much it had to do with his not being brought back to the practice squad. Not saying that that is the reason, because there are definitely other reasons. Taylor, when he went to the Jaguars, that left a hole at receiver. They've already got six receivers on the active roster. They've got Taylor. They had Taylor on the practice squad as their only receiver. They already have a tight end on the practice squad in Darren Fells. So I'm sure there are multiple reasons, but I wonder if after that move, that was kind of the point where the Cardinals said, all right, we'll just move on. And on a more speculative, I wonder if Jefferson knew of the move Friday, which led to kind of the stupid decision that he made as a reaction to, hey, he was losing his job. I don't know, but I'm going to move on from the tight end position thing. We've got, other than the other news, is where Tyrann Mathieu is now starting at free safety and will likely continue to be moved down to the slot corner. Ben, do you like seeing Mathieu as a starter at safety? Would you rather see Rashad Johnson in there in base packages, or are you happy, pleased, surprised by the rise of Mathieu this year? We'll go with you, Seth.
You know, it's the move that needed to be made from kind of the beginning. I know they were easing Mathieu in to start the season, but you look at it and Mathieu is just, he was the superior football player and what he's able to do. And so you want him in a position to make plays. Now I understand getting him as a kind of nickel corner in the slot matchup with guys, but his size limits him at times with that. So you want him, you know, you want him to be able to freelance more, I guess is kind of what I'm looking for, and play a little bit of everywhere, kind of that rover role. And so that's kind of what this does, is it allows him to do both. And that's what you want from him, because it's allowing all of his talents to be displayed kind of throughout the game.
Do you have any thoughts on the move, bringing Mathieu up to the forefront to the starting position, Ben? I think we may have lost Ben. Ben, we can't hear you. So if you can hear us. Oh. Yep, he's losing the audio. Hope give me a second. Let me chat with him. Apparently, we were having technical difficulties on his end as he has kind of disappeared. So we will continue until we get finally hit. Give us a holler, hey, when you can. He's gonna give us a call back, and then we'll get him back on the line. Mathieu, in this position, I'm really thrilled about the fact that Mathieu's been moved to the starting rotation and the starting lineup. It's really cool to see the changes he's made. A guy that was a playmaker, a big deal, then out of football, then gets drafted, really leading up to the draft being said he's undersized, he's not fast enough, all of these character issues, and he's been nothing but a perfect guy in the classroom. He's been a hard worker. He's makes plays every week. That fourth down stop against the Lions stops their drive. The fumble the forced fumble against Jared Cook against, I mean, it ended up didn't make much of a difference in the game, but it prevented another touchdown. He just made play after play after play this year, and I'm really glad to, that he and Ellington, obviously, he's been the stars, the gems of this year's draft classes. As Jonathan Cooper's out with injury, we've lost two of our draft players now between retirement and being cut. And then the others just haven't cracked the rotation yet. Now, halfway through the season, Cardinals 4-4, playing a Houston, Texas team this week that, well, it kind of surprised some teams with how they played the Colts. In the end, they lost. Case Keenum coming in hasn't been as looked, actually. He's got good quarter. He's been chucking the ball down the field. They've been throwing the ball down the field. Bruce Arians might be a little bit jealous by seeing how that is. But before we do that, we have halfway point this in the year. And listeners, if you're listening and you want to call in, give us a call at 646-478-3787. And we'll get you on the line. You can talk to us, ask us questions about the Cardinals. Right now we're going to get ready to talk about the midseason grades. So, Seth, as we go with the midseason grades, and I don't necessarily want to go position by position, but we're going to talk about how we feel the team has done so far. In your opinion, what has been the best position group? What has been the best performers when it comes to position groups that we've seen on the Cardinals this year?
The best position for me has been the defense, and more specifically, you can go, kind of go two ways in that. The defensive inside linebackers against the run have been just flat out dominant, and you can say in general the run defense as a whole has probably been one of the best in the NFL, if not the best. But I would have to go with the defensive line. They're not really getting a huge amount of pass rush outside of Calais, but they're holding up at the point of attack. They're really allowing Bull's scheme to shine through, one gap, 3-4 defense, and that's making things just look a lot better on a week-to-week basis. So, so far, I think the defense as a whole has kind of been, not surprising based on talent, surprising based on results, just the fact that there was, just that unknown with Bulls and kind of how they fell off at the end of last season.
And personally, and welcome back, Beth. Can you hear us now? Can we hear you?
I hope so. It sounds pretty good on my end, at least for now.
All right. We're back on the line. So we're talking about, Seth just said, the defensive line, the inside linebacker position, especially the defensive line, has been quite productive, kind of the stars of the team so far. I have been thrilled personally with the production we've got at inside linebacker. Even when it was Carlos Jansby and Jasper Brinkley, they were getting good production. Brinkley was making tackles. Jansby he's arguably having the finest season of his career overall. If you look across the board, the numbers, he's getting tackles. He's been really overall very good in coverage. He's getting his hands on balls and on the passing game. He's got sacks. He's got interceptions. And that was kind of the knock on him coming into the season. He was getting tackles, but he wasn't making other plays. He wasn't making the sacks, picking off the passes. And that's been what's been really great. Bringing Darrell Washington, when the two of them are in there, they put on a show against Carolina. What you said about the pass rush is the defensive line, which is interesting. I know overall we're talking about overall push, but if you look at across the sacks, I was surprised to see. I hadn't realized that the Darnell Dockett has the same amount of sacks for as Calais Campbell. Obviously, half of those came in one game against a backup, against an undrafted rookie in Tampa Bay. But you've got Darnell Dockett with 4 sacks. You've got Calais Campbell with 4 sacks. And between Dan Williams and Alameda Ta'amu, now, they're not going to produce numbers, but they've been very good in their roles at the point of attack. And so I'm going to have to agree with you. There's really nothing to disagree with. There is the best positions that we have seen so far have come, for at least in the inside linebacking core and then the defensive line. You've gotten good play from Patrick Peterson. You've gotten okay play from Jerrod Powers. I mean, it's what you
what you can expect from a number two corner. Then from there, what would you say is going down to the bottom end? What has been the worst performing group thus far for the team? The worst area that we've seen?
For me, I'll probably get killed for this, but, you know, I don't really care. I'm going to go with the veterans that they signed in the offseason on offense, Rashard Mendenhall and Carson Palmer. You know, they brought these guys in to be the catalyst, so to speak, to the, you know, the revitalization of the offense and to bring Arians, you know, vision to life in for the Cardinals. And I know the offensive line has not been good, but that's just way too easy and way too obvious. But what, you know, again, I talked about it last week. Palmer's interceptions, most of them come when he's not even under pressure. It's just a four-man rush with no pressure in his face. Seven of his interceptions are because of that. So that's a lot of interceptions to be throwing when you're facing a four-man rush with no pressure. Mendenhall has been, you know, exactly what I thought he would be. He's, you know, he doesn't have the burst he used to. He's still that patient runner, but he doesn't have the ability to plant his foot and get upfield, which makes that patience in turn useless because it just ends up being blotting instead of, you know, patience with vision and then burst. So those have been my two biggest disappointments. You know, you can say the offense as a whole and the offensive line, but we knew this offensive line was going to struggle again. Only adding, you know, pieces to it. And then, you know, now it looks completely different with three different starters other than line and college. But you know, the loss of Jonathan Cooper, I don't think can be, and that's putting a lot on a rookie that's never actually played in a snap. The loss of Jonathan Cooper can't really be talked about enough, and what he's, you know, what he cost this team this year not having him.
And I'm going to go a slightly different direction. I'm going to look at this in terms of expectations, and while quarterback, I wouldn't grade the quarterback at the worst, especially because the perspective tells me, well, it's still better than we had last year. Not necessarily because of the turnovers. Now, they're on pace. I mean, obviously, Carson Palmer's on pace to have turned the ball over, to thrown more interceptions than the combined trifecta, quadrifecta of quarterbacks last year when they combined was, I think, for 9 touchdowns and 21 interceptions. You've got Carson Palmer with the 14 picks so far, matching his season total from a year ago. But while the offensive line play has been bad, if we were expecting big improvement for the offensive line, especially with backups in the game, then we were kind of kidding yourself. But I look at the tight end position and say, oh goodness, ugh. We were supposed to, I mean, for a position area, a position group that Bruce Arians says is one of his favorite, and it's kind of the staple of his offense, the two tight ends said, the one tight end, but to get tight ends producing, they have had just nothing outside of some garbage time catches that Rob Housler had against Seattle, where he was able to get in some rhythm. He thought perhaps maybe that would kind of be the building blocks of the rest of the season, and then nothing. I would grade based on that, if you're grading on kind of a curve, that the tight ends grade out the lowest out of everything. I would say the tight ends grade out the lowest, followed by the offensive line, simply situation because of the injuries. They moved on from Levi Brown for better or for worse. moving on to Bradley Saul. And so you've got a rookie at left tackle. Well, not a rookie, but you've got a drafted guy. He's a second player at left tackle. You've got a journeyman at right guard in Paul Fonseca, who had a great preseason, but has been unspectacular, to say the least, thus far. Eric Winston hasn't produced the way we'd hoped. We've got good play from Darren Collins, which has really been nice to see that he's kind of been that he has improved his play over last year. So I thought that tight end is the lowest of the low, followed by the offensive line, and then I don't think I put the quarterback even next. Ben, you're back with us. What for you has been the worst position group or worst area grading out the first half of the season?
Oh, boy. Yeah, tight ends are definitely up there. The thing with them is that expectations were pretty low, I think, going into the season. You expected a lot more from Hausler, but you kind of knew what Dre was. You kind of knew Corey Sperry is a journeyman. You know, you didn't really expect a whole lot from the group, and it was pretty obvious during the preseason, especially when we were missing Hausler for a few games, that we weren't going to get a whole lot from them. And then, of course, obviously Hausler's been a huge disappointment so far, and no one else has really stepped up. So they've been pretty bad, but I think I hate to go back to the Palmer hate chain, but we expected a lot more from him, and he's no one has ever seen him play as badly as he has been playing for us, especially at least not for as long as he's been, you know, kind of struggling this season. So I think for me it's probably quarterback. The thing there really is that it's not just Palmer, you know, it's the idea that no one else on the team is going to be better than what Palmer has given us at times, you know, just the fact that Stanton hasn't come off the bench. And then Lindley is obviously on the back burner for the future or whatever happens there. But that's scary to me that there's no other option, you know, when Palmer's out there throwing 3-4 picks or whatever.
Now, here's to throw some stat at you. This is courtesy of Sean Church, who likes to give us some fun stats in the middle of the week. He on Twitter. And this is for the Carson Palmer apologists out there, and it's just perhaps it's something to give you some thought. Carson Palmer so far in the final 5 minutes of games this season, and which is kind of crucial because Cardinals have been in several close games. You got the week one close game where they lost. Their win over Detroit, close game. Tampa Bay, close game. You could consider the San Francisco game a close game, except it wasn't in the last 5 minutes. Really, it wasn't. But this is the stats. He's attempted 37 passes, completed 25 of them for 229 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an interception, a passer rating of 99.9. It is interesting to note, however, that his yards per attempt is a meager 6.2 yards per attempt. We have seen good Palmer. We've seen bad Palmer. We've seen meh Palmer and everything in between. Is that a reason why it gives you hope? Because he has, in reality, when a push comes to shove later in the game, he has been able to perform. Form so far. Do you, Ben, in your case, on the hate train, for as you call it, for Carson Palmer, do you look at that stat and does it give you pause at all?
I mean, it's certainly it's why he's still playing, I think. And that's it's good, it's important, especially with a team like this where defense can keep you in a lot of games. It's more about limiting your mistakes early, I think. That's really been the Achilles heel, but yeah, hopefully, like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where a guy is going to show you what he is, you know. And I think that the fourth quarters that we've been getting from Palmer, especially towards the end of games, are more at least more what we expected, and more like what he's played throughout his career, you know. So hopefully that kind of continues to emerge, and we see more of that throughout the whole game than just towards the end.
Now, Seth, I know you reacted kind of to Sean's tweet, that is, saying a lot of underneath stuff. Do you take that stat with a grain of salt, or do you look at it as positive for perhaps the rest of the season, as clearly he and his teammates have still not been completely on the same page when it comes to the offense?
I think what it tells us is that, and I'm going to go back to last year in Oakland as well, I think what it tells us is that Palmer has changed from a quarterback that was able to get the explosive deep ball down the field offense with, you know, Chad Johnson when he was still Chad Johnson, and TJ Houshmandzadeh, and the receiver that passed away, Chris Henry, and really, you know, push that ball down the field and get electric deep plays. And he's changed from a quarterback into a guy that, if he is keeping it short, if he's keeping it, you know, near the line of scrimmage, doing a lot of the, you don't even want to call it West Coast offense because it's not, but just a lot of, you know, check downs and dump offs, and then, you know, once or twice going for that big play down the field, he's a better quarterback than a guy that is trying to consistently 40% of the time push the ball vertically down the field. And we saw that last year in Oakland. And I think, you know, just based on Sean's stats, and I'd have to go back and chart all the last five minutes of the game throws to, you know, really break this down. But you look at it and just what he's done, and I think that kind of backs it up. He's not the same quarterback, and it's not a bad thing. The guy, the poor guy, you know, needs Tommy John surgery or has had Tommy John surgery. I can't remember, to be honest with you right now, but, you know, he's struggling, and you know, he's limited by an offensive line. He's limited, you know, it looks a little bit physically. So he's doing what he can to best fit the team. And, you know, based on Sean's stats and, you know, kind of just extrapolating all of that from his overall numbers, it looks like he's most successful when he's throwing it, you know, short of, you know, shorter, nearer the line of scrimmage, instead of trying to be that Arians quarterback pushing the ball down the field.
So is he Alex Smith now? Only with now, granted, Alex Smith and his arm have been debated for years. But is Carson Palmer turning into Alex Smith, and is that, should we be sad? Should we be upset because we are expecting more? Or what? How should we react to that?
I think we react to it just by understanding that when you don't draft and develop a quarterback and you bring in a guy that's, I believe he's 33 or 34, you're going to get what, you know, kind of like what Ben just said, you get, he shows who he is eventually. It's not, you know, Palmer's fault that he's 34. That's just happens to be his age. So he kind of is what he is now. He's a guy that can't win you games. He's shown that he can lose games by trying to do too much, but he can be a game manager, keep you in games, kind of reset the offense, and he can push the ball down the field when needed. But I just think you don't want to do it a lot with him right now, until maybe you get that offensive line settled and things of that nature, which probably won't be this season. But it's just, I think he, like you said, he's more Alex Smith now. He's just got a, and the arm strength can be debated because we've seen him underthrow a lot of deep routes. But, you know, he's just not the same guy that he was 2 or 3 years ago. He's closer to that Oakland quarterback that was, you know, throwing the ball 5 yards down the field a lot.
Yeah,
it's, of course, it's a little disappointing, but you just have to temper your expectations, kind of roll your eyes and go with it. I think that's really the only option we have.
Now, no one's brought this up yet when we've got looking at the percentages. We haven't talked much about the defensive backs. How would you grade, Ben, the play of our defensive backs? Obviously, there's been some good. There's been some ugly, a.k.a. look at the tight end production against the Cardinals. If they give a, if the tight end scores a touchdown, the Cardinals lose. If they don't, they win. Career games from Jared Cook, career games from Jimmy Graham, career games from Vernon Davis. How would you grade out our defensive backfields, or would you have to look at it at the different positions, at the safety positions, at the, or by individual players? How would you grade out that position group?
Not really all that high. I'm really happy with probably the top two. Peterson, he's been a little bit up and down, but you know, he's still a legitimate CB1. I don't think there's any debating that. You'd like him to be a little bit more consistent, but you know, it's not like I wouldn't trade him for the world. So, you know, I'm happy with him overall. And then Matthew has been just fantastic. I think he's probably, so far this season, he's been an elite player. He's been probably the most consistent in the secondary, and he's exciting to watch too with his playmaking ability. It's the other guys that you kind of have an issue. I think there are just some stop gaps there. Outside of our top two players, it's mostly just journeymen and the one-year deals or limited contracts that we're probably not going to see around next year. I know Bell has taken a lot of heat for our struggles against tight ends, and rightly so in a lot of cases, but it's, you know, that's not really what he is at this point in his career. He really hasn't been a star player, I don't think, since he played for Miami, and that was 6 years ago, so... He kind of knew going into it that he would be pretty good in the box, and he has been. He's been pretty good against the run, so he takes a little bit of unfair heat, I think. Just, you know, because he's playing
reference?
A little bit.
Is that a Rex Ryan
yeah.
reference?
Oh, geez. Oh, boy. Poor Jets fans. But he, for playing a little bit out of his comfort zone, I think, because he's not – the deep cover safety, and you know, he's asked to do that occasionally. When you look at RJ, he hasn't been on the field enough to really judge him, and I think I pretty much say that every year, but he's been solid like normal. The worry there is that he's gotten more headlines for his little finger injury than for his actual play, so you'd like to see him maybe have a game like he has against the Falcons a little bit more often. Those two picks were pretty nice to see, but I guess this, in terms of an actual grade for the overall secondary, it's probably a C for me.
What about you, Seth? How would you grade the defensive backs?
Outside of the LSU connection, they've been, you know, not good, below average, I would say. It's just, you know, it's tough because We've talked about it a little bit before, but Bowles does a lot more on the back end of the defense than on the front end. And he's doing more on the front end recently as the guys are getting a little more comfortable. And he's had, you know, linebackers that can play, you know, or not play, but linebackers that have gotten reps and snaps in order to get them in there. But, you know, Bell has been – he's been – all right in pass coverage. He's not good. You know, he's probably average. Jerrod Powers has kind of been an abject disaster thus far as a cornerback, too. Starts getting more at the cornerback position. We saw a little more of him the last couple of weeks. Then Powers have been. So that'll be interesting. I think C- is fair, just because, like Ben alluded to, Peterson has been good. He hasn't been great, and Matthew gives up a lot of catches, but he doesn't allow any yards after catch, and that's just due to his limitations of being. That's one of the things that we'll always have to live with him as a player. So, but you know, it's not a bad thing. It's definitely probably the kid on the defense outside linebacker, but that's a different animal because that's all injury related.
And then I look at the group as a whole. Now I see what Jeremiah Bell has done. I wouldn't say that he's getting unhair feet or unfair heat. He has been serviceable and even decent in some cases. The unfortunate thing is that when he gives up plays, they end up being touchdowns. What I think is it's still 6 touchdowns have been scored on him in coverage. That's really kind of an absurd number considering the number of passing touchdowns they've allowed. He's been out there on those plays every single time. And if we look at Patrick Peterson's play, if we can take away one play, that really huge, that long touchdown play by Calvin Johnson, and that was a weird play. It really kind of skews the season that Patrick Peterson has had, because if you take that play away, he's been really good. And even that play was a little bit fluky. He lost concentration for a split second when he saw Carlos Dansby leap up for the catch. He heard a ball hit pads, and he thought Dansby had it. So for a split second, he kind of lost concentration, and Johnson somehow caught the ball. That ball was rifled in there. It was a laser beam. And had he not thought that Dansby makes that interception, Johnson is tackled right there. Instead of a 77 or 70-plus yard touchdown pass, you've got a 9-yard gain. And the rest of his numbers look really pretty solid. He hasn't been, you know, completely shut down. I mean, the numbers say he's a really good cornerback, but he's not the best. But he's real versatile in what he's able to do. Matthew's been fantastic. I really like Rashad Johnson and what he does. He's kind of a quiet guy back there that really kind of is the glue. And I love that the contract that he signed for a little over $1 million, I think, for each of the 3 seasons he signed, which makes him very, very easy to keep around, which I like. So obviously Matthew's turning into a star. Jeremiah Bell, Gerard Powers, well, we got him for 2 more years based on the contract. I like what I've gotten to see. I would give the defensive secondary overall a solid B-, just because in the scheme of things, they've really played quite well. You look at the games that they've had, the interceptions, what they were able to do with Matt Ryan, and I like it overall. What's interesting to me, observation-wise, is that dime position, where what's that 6th defensive back that they used in dime packages has gone from, all right, they started with Tony Jefferson. Then you saw Javier Arenas a little bit. Then you saw Anton Kaysen. Now it's back to at least the last game. Arenas was the one that moved into that dime position. And Tony Jefferson, interestingly enough, has not seen the playing field on defense in some time other than in injury play. After the defensive backs, the defensive line we said is pretty solid. What would you guys make of the wide receiver play? Obviously, we've got Larry Fitzgerald, we've got Michael Floyd, Andre Roberts, who had a great week 1. But Ben, what's your take on the wide receivers?
I'm really torn on how to actually grade them, because you look at Fitz, and he's still really good, but the production hasn't been quite as good as you want. But on the other hand, he has 2 bad hamstrings. But on the other hand, you know, I keep going back and forth with him. I think he's done really well toughing out the injuries, and I'm pretty okay with what we've gotten out of him so far. And hopefully he comes back rested and refreshed, and he can. I don't know if he is that player that we all remember from the playoffs, you know, back when. But hopefully he can be still really good, obviously, and he needs to be as a fan favorite, and with the contract he has and everything. I don't really have too many complaints with him right now. Floyd, I think, has been really good given his opportunities. In my opinion, obviously you'd like to see him get a couple more targets, a couple more catches per game. The yards aren't exactly piling up, but again, when they throw to him, he seems to do everything you need of him and maybe a little bit more. And obviously the blocking for those 2 has been exceptional. They're definitely players that you want on the field in that regard. You look at the depth a little bit more. Roberts has been completely invisible except for the 1 game, and that's been really disappointing. But we have gotten a little bit of help here and there from the unknown guys. You know, Kerry Taylor, for his 1 game, he helped out a lot. And then you look at Jerron Brown, he's been solid. He's good for a catch or 2 a game, which is fine for a 4th receiver that was undrafted, you know. He's just kind of he's hopefully learning the game and coming along. And then obviously the random deep play threats, there's flavor of the week type guys have had an impact too. I think for an overall grade, I'm going to give the receivers a B because I think part of their lack of production, I feel like, obviously it goes on the offensive line a little bit. It goes on the quarterback. He has a little bit more time. Maybe he gets to read the field a little bit better. Maybe he gets to his, you know, second or third progression, because it seems like on a lot of plays, especially where the ball is a contested catch or where it's picked off, it seems like Palmer kind of locks onto his first read and he doesn't really get the time or the opportunity to move on to the next guy. And it seems like if you're watching the film or you're rewatching the game, like, well, there's a guy that's open, but Palmer doesn't see him for whatever reason. So you can't really blame that on the receiver if he is open and he's just not getting thrown to.
Seth, how do you, what's your take on the receivers?
I think in the end, it just comes down to the fact that Palmer and the offensive line affects ineffective, that it's hard to adequately grade the receivers. And it's to the point where, you know, Floyd is doing enough other things that you just have to hope that when the ball gets to him, he can make plays. I mean, you look at his targets and they're just so sporadic. He had 4 against Atlanta, where he had 9 against Seattle, you know, and then he only had 5 against San Francisco. And you know, you're not expecting him to get even number of targets, especially with a guy like Fitz on the other side. But you'd like to see he and Fitz both get between 8 and, you know, 10 targets a game. And right now for him, that's not happening. He's getting about just under 7 targets a game. But you want to see more from Floyd in production. But being fair, he's been as productive as he can be with the targets he's getting. And then you look at, as Ben pointed out, you just kind of nod your head and hope that the downfall of Larry is not upon us, and that it's just those issues, you know, like Ben said, it's just the hamstrings, and that's all there is to it. I'd give them I'd almost want to give them an incomplete, the top 2 wide receivers. Everybody after that, outside of Andre Roberts, I think you can give a solid B to, because they've done enough to be relevant. But I think overall a B minus would be fair. Again, it's hard, as Ben said, unless you go back and you kind of know all the situations of what's going on, put a blame on the wide receivers. So maybe they're not doing as well as we think.
And if you look at production wise, we've got 36 receptions for Larry Fitzgerald, 34 for Michael Floyd, 20 for Andre Roberts. And then after that, it's really few and far between. Jerron Brown leads the top three with 7 catches. Then there's Patrick Peterson with 4. Kerry Taylor, no longer with the team, with 3. And then both Britton Golden and Teddy Williams, each with 1 long reception each. I would give the report card, if I were to grade the receivers, it'd be a very average C. And then, yeah, that's affected by the quarterback. Without going into much detail, I give the offensive line, I don't give it an F. Last year was an F. I give this year, at best, a D, maybe a D-, because they're a little bit better than last year, not getting up the sacks, in part because the quarterback played, getting the ball out quicker. But it's marginally better than last year. It's not the worst thing we've ever seen. It's marginally better. So I don't give the offensive line a failing grade, because we saw what a failing grade looks like. I give it a D-. Ben, what's your grade on the offensive line?
I'm gonna stick with my F on them, although you swayed me a little bit. D- sounds pretty tempting. it is a little bit improved over last year. The thing, it's not a bad F. You know, the expectations were pretty low. We've had injuries. We're already down to second, third string guys. I look at them and, you know, I think we'll probably be returning at most 2 starters next year, and I think that'll be a really good thing. They've done enough to keep the offense moving for the most part. So again, F is probably a little bit harsh, but it would be nice if they could do a little bit better, get a little bit more time for the QB. You look at the running game, really only one of our backs has been able to breach that coveted 4.0 yards per carry average, and that's Ellington, and he does all his work himself. He does all the heavy lifting himself, so I'm still pretty low on them, obviously, but it's not like a call to arms, because they're doing the best they can, you know that. So,
all right, Seth, what would be your letter grade for our offensive line?
F.
Okay.
I mean, you look at it, the sack numbers are down, which is important. I understand that, but overall they're giving up more overall quarterback pressures than at this point in the season than they're on pace, I should say, for more quarterback pressures this year than last year. So it's hard, but I haven't been impressed. And outside of college, Sendeline has had moments of playing well, but it's not been a pleasant sight to watch this team on the offensive line.
Okay, special teams. Between the return game, the coverage team, the punt, and the kick, I wish I could give this an A because we've got nothing out of the return game. I'm going to give this a B plus, outside of nothing in the punt return game, outside of one good return by Arenas. The return game's been bad, but punt and punt coverage has been fantastic. Jay Feely's been great on field goals. Any difference on the grade for the special teams? You give it above or below a B plus, Ben?
I'm okay with a B. Kicker's fantastic. The returners, yeah, you're right. They need to be better, especially, just really all of them.
What about you, Seth?
I've been fine with the special teams. I mean, like you said, the return game has been kind of nil at this point with Peterson getting nicked up. And I know he's not injured, but just getting nicked up, I would almost take him off of all kick returns unless it's a special case like Baltimore used to do with Ed Reed and just let Matthew take it for now and kind of go from there.
Interesting. So let's move on. This is the part where I'm going to kind of take a back seat, and I think this is the part where our listeners will be most interested, is we're going to move over for the next 20-25 minutes as we talk about the upcoming NFL draft and the draft needs for the Arizona Cardinals. And so I'm going to kind of sit back and let my knowledgeable co-host talk about it, since I do not claim, especially this time of year, to have any idea of the college football prospects out there. I watch college football mainly for my local team, the Sun Devils, so I can tell you what I think about my Sun Devils. And when it comes to quarterback Taylor Kelly, he's not going to be an NFL quarterback. Great college guy, no arm. Outside of that, so we're going to talk about tackle, quarterback. So Seth, you and Ben kind of take over. And the question is, we're going to start with, is what position on the offensive line after tackle is going to be most likely to be upgraded this offseason? I'll let Seth, you take off with that and go with there to Ben.
I think when you look at the draft and where they're likely to be picking right now, and I'm just going to base it off of the fact that this team is going to continue to play like they are, and we're going to see basically an 8-win team, and you're going to see 8-8 for the rest of the season. So that's going to be where I'm going to talk about for now. When you look at that, you're talking in the 15 to 20 range. So you're not talking about getting necessarily the top impact talent at that position of need. So you're going to miss out on guys like a Jake Matthews. Probably going to end up missing out on a guy like a Cameron Irving at left tackle from Florida State. So your left tackle, you're probably going to get your second pair of left tackles. What can be interesting at that point is what happens with the Darnell Dock. If he ends up being gone, you have some really interesting 3-4 defensive ends in that range. You have some interesting, albeit not necessarily great, pass rushing outside linebackers in that range. But the guy that I've kind of been harping on lately, and kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show with the Tyrann Mathieu thing, is a player out of Alabama named Hashawn Clinton Dix, or he actually goes by Ha Ha Clinton Dix. And he's a guy that I think overall can be kind of that Earl Thomas fit in the back end of a secondary. He can play as a single high safety, something that you can tell Bowles has wanted to do a lot of, and he just doesn't have the player to kind of put back there to be the center fielder. But he can also come up and play in that strong safety press role near the line of scrimmage and make plays. He's really improved his physicality this year. I think when you look at just where they're likely going to be picking, I think it's either going to be you're going to look at a second tier left tackle that has a lot of upside but needs a lot of work. Somebody maybe like a Taylor Lewan, Antonio out of Michigan, Taylor or Antonio Richardson out of Tennessee. But I think more importantly, the first position, if you're in that middle teens, that you can upgrade is something on defense. Maybe a defensive end, maybe an outside linebacker, but you're going to be kind of in the sweet spot for a safety or cornerback to help.
Your turn, Ben.
Safety would be a good pick there, probably, especially you know if you have a chance at the top guy. Everything that I've heard and seen is there's a bit of a drop-off after the top talent, so the Alabama kid, Clinton Dix, he would probably be a good pick. It's a need. I don't know if it's the biggest need. Our secondary gets a lot of help from the front seven, and I think you might want to look at that 34 defensive end as a real possibility, especially with the way a lot of the top defensive tackles have been playing in college. They've been pretty inconsistent, at least they were to start the season. So I know stocks for most of those guys are really up in the air right now. Nobody's really quite sure, you know, who's going to fit in what defense or where they're going to go. So I think it's possible. Picking in the middle of the draft, we'd have pretty much a run-of-the-mill on that position. But again, you want to look at quarterback and left tackle for this team. And if you don't get that in the first couple of rounds, I don't know. Can we deal with another season? One thing I do want to ask Seth, because I've seen your tweets, and Luan, I've only really gotten to watch him against Notre Dame so far this year, and I was impressed with him in that game. But what are some of the knocks on him? He was going into the season, he was probably easily, I would say, the number two tackle. I think a lot of analysts still think that he's probably the number two. What have you seen from him lately that makes you think maybe he would slip down to where the Cardinals would be picking in that middle teens range, and would he be worth the pick for them?
One of the things that's been kind of the knock on Luan coming into this year from me, and now a lot of people are in his feet don't kind of match up. So when he's in pass protection and he's in his slide, he doesn't really do a good job with his hands. And then when he gets his hands on somebody, his feet get heavy. So instead of having heavy hands and light feet, he'll go with heavy hands and heavy feet, kind of Levi Brownish. He's got much more athleticism than Levi, so I'm not making that comparison. But I've actually compared him to Eric Wynn before. He moves well. He's an aggressive guy. He's got a lot of work to do. I know a lot of people compared him to Jake Long, but I don't think he's nearly as polished as Jake Long was coming out, so I think that's not an apt comparison. Realistically, he's just not while he's an athlete, he doesn't play with athleticism at the left tackle spot. And just in Arians' offense, basing everything off of Arians' offense, in Arians' offense, you really don't want a guy that's not going to be able to move his feet and move laterally from side to side with ease and keep guys off of the quarterback. And that's what I've been kind of my biggest knock of Luan this whole time.
You probably want to see a little more development because he is a four-year starter, isn't he? And to be having those issues still, that is kind of a concern.
Well, to be fair to him, he's never he had in that stupid offense where with Denard Robinson and whatever they were running that offense. I honestly don't even know what you would call it. So
yeah,
but so now he's kind of just now, I don't want to say learning, but he's kind of just now playing in more of a pro-style set with Devin Gardner. And it's not even a strict pro-style. It's just, it's social. And so you're wanting to see more, like you said, more growth, but he's kind of at a at the spot where you would kind of expect him to be just based on what he hasn't gotten to do yet.
So looking at the tackles, you guys have mentioned Matthews and Lawan. You guys figure they're going to be on the top 10. And Seth, you wrote a little bit about this, but and this is for both of you. We'll start with Ben. Who do you like in the next wave of tackles? And if you're the Cardinals, assuming those top two guys are gone, who would you take at a left tackle and at what spot?
I don't know if right now I don't have another first-round tackle. My third guy on my board right now is plays for North Dakota State. If you've ever heard of him, Billy Turner, you can watch him on Draft Breakdown. He has a really actually a pretty impressive game against Kansas State, and he's not, you know, playing for I think North Dakota State is an FBS school, so I think you look at him as kind of a Terran Armstead. It's how high can he go? Postseason evals are going to be really important for him. He moves really well. He plays with power, and he's compared even to Matthews and Lewan, the top two tackles, he's really aggressive in the run game. He's actually pretty fun to watch. But again, it's North Dakota State. You know, I don't know exactly what the expectations are for him right now. I expect him to climb up some people's boards and get some attention in kind of the postseason all-star type games and evaluations. I think he'll, you know, look pretty good at the combine or what have you, but is that worth a first round pick? I really can't say that it is. So after the first two, I watched Tennessee's Antonio Richardson against South Carolina. That was rough. That was a bad game for him. I need to watch more of all of these guys, because obviously just a couple games isn't enough to really fairly judge them. But after the first wave, I'm really not excited about anybody right now, sadly.
When I look at this class, I think it's kind of Matthews and then a lot of other guys. my number two is kind of fluctuated, and right now I'm really looking at Cameron Irving out of Florida State. He shut down Vic Beasley in the Clemson game. He had some issues in pass pro against Miami. Sorry, I was trying to remember what team. Played against Miami the other day, but he's very light of foot. He's also very new to the position. He's kind of like Johnson was last year. Cameron Irving was a defensive tackle at Florida State prior to the 2012 season, and so he went over to left tackle in the ACC, and even though the ACC is down a little bit, you know, he played left tackle and was kind of overshadowed by his colleague Manilik Watson at right tackle, and now this year he's really gotten kind of the pub he deserves, and rightfully so. Got Watson out for, and I've made some calls, and I can't get any real good information other than he's probably going to stay, but he's out of Texas A&M. His name's Cedric, and I really don't know his last name. I'm just going to pronounce it how it's spelled, and that's Ogbui. It's O-G-B-U-E. Guy. He's the right tackle at Texas A&M right now. The people I've called and spoken with just said that he's going to go back because he's been promised the left tackle position next year at Texas A&M. So basically Texas A&M has become a revolving door of top five left tackle prospects, it looks like, at this point. After Colton Ogbui now. So he's a really interesting player. He's got He looks like he's got great length, and he moves well, so he's fun to watch play. And that the Texas A&M guys, they, you know, Jokel struggled at the beginning of the year, but he's really come on since he's moved to the left side, and he's been to watch. Outside of that, you've got some interesting guys. I've talked to Juwan James is a of Antonio Richardson, and he plays right tackle for Tennessee. Talked with that believe he can play left tackle in the NFL, so that's an interesting guy to watch, kind of as the progress moves forward. And then there's a second wave of guys I've watched. James Hurst out of North Carolina, you can watch a lot of him with, and his, you know, cohesion with Jonathan Cooper. You have a guy out of Miami, Florida, who is probably the best left tackle prospect in high school history, Dontrell Henderson. He's played right tackle for Miami, and he actually splits time with another player. But just from a physical standpoint, he might be the best left tackle prospect in this entire draft. There's just a lot of concerns about his motor and his desire to play. Some people I talked to have said that they just want to see him out of Miami and in a different environment and see if it changes it, because he's got so much upside potential. And then the two other guys I'll briefly mention, and that's Sean Hickey out of Syracuse and Jake Moore out of Austin. Both of those guys are day two tackle prospects that Cardinals fans might just want to start, you know, taking a peek at if you're into that sort of thing. As the season goes along, I'll have write-ups on these guys, but they're interesting prospects, and they do a lot of good things for, you know, their teams, and they're fun to watch. Muhort will come out this year, but Hickey may stay, but depending on what happens with this class. And the guy I didn't mention was Sash Condra, and I did that for a reason. So
I think maybe another name worth throwing in the hat would be Cornelius Lucas out of Kansas State. He's massive, and he moves well. It's not that he moves well despite being massive. He's 6'9", 320, but again, the tackle class is kind of a lot like the quarterbacks right now. There's that clearly defined, obvious number one that's going really, really high and everybody really wants. And then after that, it's kind of – there are some questions. After that top guy, you don't really know exactly how much of a contribution you're going to get from any single player right now at the next level. You know, you can take him early, but how good is he going to be? Is it going to take him a couple of years? You know, we don't know right now.
Let's – talking offensive line, let's talk about the quarterback position. Let's hear you guys on the take. Is now, one, are you both in agreement that Teddy Bridgewater is the number one guy? Is he a guy that you would move up for if you could? How far? What do you give up? What do you guys think? Seth, is Bridgewater the guy in this draft that you have to get if at all possible, no matter the cost?
You know, part of my problem is the Washington Red. I look at the Redskins and what RG3 has done for them. He led them to the playoffs last year, and then he got injured, and he's playing well now. You know, he's playing better now. I should say he's not playing well, but he's playing better now as he's getting healthier. But one of the problems with doing what the Redskins did is, if that guy gets injured, God forbid, and you know, you never know in this league, they're basically screwed now, because they've got no first-round pick last year in the 2013 draft. They've got no first-round pick this year in the 2014 draft, and they only moved up a little bit. The Cardinals would probably have to give up two first-round picks and probably a second and a third over the next 3 years to move up to the Bridgewater range. And while I think Bridgewater is kind of a franchise guy, with all the needs the Cardinals have, you can't do that. It's not possible. Even if this is Andrew Luck, and I hate saying this, but even if it's Andrew Luck, just with all the needs that the Cardinals have on offense, and you can't, unless you have a plan to just really address the offensive line in free agency and kind of blow all of your cap space, and then go, it's kind of going for broke, because you're not going to be able to add any young pieces early, and then you're going to have to, you know, hope that you're able to retain guys like, you know, Patrick Peterson or, you know, young players like Jonathan Cooper coming forward, when you're also going to have to pay this quarterback in 4 or 5 years, you know, $100 million if he turns out to be what he's expected to be.
Ben, is Teddy B your guy?
Oh, he's definitely my guy. There's no question about that. But I'm with Seth on actually being able to move up and get him, unless the Cardinals completely tank and lose the next 8 games. There's just no way I think that they can justify the trading cost. The cost in picks, obviously. holes. The team has some holes. I think you could, Seth alluded to, you could probably make a move in the draft, I think, but you definitely couldn't jump that high from where the Cardinals are going to be picking, because I think you could get in free agency. Brandon Albert might be there, Eugene Monroe, somebody like that. I think you can probably help yourself on the offensive line in free agency this offseason, if that's the plan. I do think they have the flexibility to move up a little bit, but not the cost that it would take to actually get Bridgewater, which is a little bit unfortunate, but you make do.
So the quarterback position, Teddy Bridgewater is the guy you want, but you're not going to trade up to get him because they're not going to be bad enough to do that. Carlton's going to be likely drafting right in the middle of the first round. Do you guys say, hey, they really need to draft a quarterback in the first round? If so, who's going to be in that range that the Cardinals should look at if they're talking about, if you're talking about a balance between talent and scheme? And if you'd say no in the first round, where should they address that quarterback position in that draft? We'll start with you, Ben.
The guy that's getting a lot of hype now, and I really haven't gotten to watch him since his junior season, is David Carr, I believe that's the one for Fresno
Derek,
State.
Derek.
That Derek. It is Derek? Okay. Okay. Yeah, Derek Carr, yeah.
David Carr's already been there.
Yeah, we've been down that bridge. Well, half the teams in the NFL have anyway. I don't know. Maybe he's a possibility. Maybe his stock continues to soar and he ends up in the top 10. It's really hard to say. It depends a lot, obviously, on the underclassmen, the freshmen, the sophomores and the juniors, if they actually come out and where they end up going. Scheme is going to be a huge thing for a lot of those guys. I'm not exactly sure if Hundley would be a good fit here from UCLA. I think you look at Mariota, and he's definitely flashed ability, but we really don't get to see him pass under pressure very often. That's been kind of the Achilles heel with Palmer here, is that you really need to be able to deal with pressure with this offensive line. And even if the line was better with this particular scheme, it's still asking you to take some heat. So you can, you have to hold on to the ball a little bit so you can deliver it downfield, give those routes time to develop. And you don't really get to see that with certain college QBs. I think personally, I would probably pass on quarterback in the first round right now anyway, without getting to watch these guys a little bit more and say definitively that, yeah, I think they're one of these players will be a good fit in what Arians does. I think I would look at one later on though, because like I said earlier in the show, it scares the crap out of me that we don't have anybody that can really step in and play when Palmer really struggles. Look at maybe Stephen Morris as a guy that can come in and be a potential downfield passer for you, maybe in a year or two, or maybe just as a backup for right now. Some of the unknown guys that aren't getting quite as much attention, like Jeff Matthews out of Cornell. I don't think you're not going to want to start him right away, but he has a lot of tools that you really like, and I think that he could maybe come in the early to mid rounds and really help you out as a backup and as a developmental prospect. After that, I'm not quite sure. It's a lot of guys I've seen a little bit of that I kind of like, but I can't really say for sure that I think we should go after them. So I'm definitely in favor of taking a QB somewhere. I want a little bit more talent in that room, and I don't think that's unfair to ask.
So Seth, if they're going to draft a guy in the first round, what are some of the type of players you should be looking at? And do you think they will draft? And if they don't draft a guy in the first round, where do you see them targeting a quarterback?
I think it starts with, you look at what can the guy do downfield, obviously, but secondly, what kind of pocket presence and can he avoid pressure? You look at a guy like Derek Carr, and he's surprisingly mobile. Obviously, a guy like Taj Boyd is very mobile, but his downfield ball leaves a lot to be desired. Stephen Morris can move a little bit. He doesn't do it nearly as much or as effectively as a guy like David or Derek Carr. Zach Mettenberger is a guy I like, but I would never draft here, simply because if you're taking Mettenberger in the first round, that means you're not drafting a tackle. And then while the idea that you can get a tackle in the second round is fine and dandy, you're still going with a guy that's very Carson Palmer-esque in his movement. and then but he also doesn't have that quick trigger. That's one thing you can say about Palmer is he gets rid of the ball quickly. Mettenberger does not. What we've talked about on my draft podcast is that Mettenberger reminds a lot of us of Byron Leftwich, and you remember one of the knocks on Leftwich and how slow he did everything. He was really slow getting rid of the ball, and that, you know, that's a concern. He's got the big arm and he can do it. It's just, do you want a guy that isn't going to be able to get the ball out quickly enough? You know, if you're going to take a guy in the first round, there's two guys I look at. The first one's Derek Carr, and he has maybe the best arm in this class. He reminds me of Jay Cutler a lot. So basically, if you can get Jay Cutler but younger and having taken less hits, that's an option. The other guy that I look at in the first round that's just intriguing to me, but I wouldn't draft him unless you're on a 3-year plan, and Keim and Arians have a guarantee that they're on a 3-year plan after this year, so 4-year plan total, and that would be Brett Hundley. Just having watched him over the last 5 years when he was at Chandler and now and at UCLA, he's come a long way as a passer. He's got obviously excellent mobility, which is important. So you just look at it and you know he's got a lot of work to do. So he would have to sit behind Palmer or two. That's how much I think he would need to sit, and then maybe he's an option. But I really don't think you can draft a non-impactful player team in the first round. Going a little deeper, he brought up Stephen Morris, who's an intriguing prospect. I'm actually doing a write-up on Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray right now, who is interesting. I can kind of leave it at that. He's got some arm abilities that you want, and he makes throws, Arians throws in the Georgia offense quite often, but it's just going to be a matter of what is what you like about him. He's smaller, and he doesn't do a lot of the same things Russell Wilson does to compensate for his lack of physical tools or his physical ability, or not ability, but just his physical makeup. There's the word I'm looking for. So those are the guys I'm looking at. There's some other intriguing guys that are a little further down, but I really haven't got to start a lot of them. So as Ben brought, Marcus Mariota is interesting, but if he comes out, he's going to be drafted in the top five, I'm assuming. So I don't think it's really kind of like Teddy Bridgewater. I've just kind of stopped watching them.
So if we're going to look at the offense on the whole, or the draft as a whole, this last draft, the Cardinals went offense, defense, 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 offense, offense, offense. Then they went offense, offense. Are we going to see a heavy offense draft, or do you see it being more balanced? We'll go to the last one as we get right up against the edge. Real quickly, are we going to see a balance between offensive and defensive players drafted, or are we going to see more heavily in one direction or the other? Seth, what do you think?
I think that Arians wants to get his offense on track because that's what he's known for. And so since his offense has struggled so much, I think he's going to want to get that on track. So I think we're going to see an offense of pick. I think we're going to see we could see a tight end in the middle of the first round. We could see a left tackle in the middle of the first round, and then we could see, you know, a tight end in the second round, or we could even see a wide receiver in the second round. I know that sounds crazy, but they still need that kind of over-the-top speed threat, and as we've talked about, Mr. Fitzgerald is not getting any younger. So I think they're going to go defense, look to add depth and talent that they can develop as they kind of phase guys out. Maybe they just try to bring Dansby back. If not, then I think they're comfortable with Washington and I believe Brinkley was Brinkley on a 1 year deal or is he on a
2 year
deal?
He's on a two year.
I think they're comfortable with having Brinkley as their other inside linebacker with Minter kind of still learning the ropes. And so you're going to see a lot of that where, okay, we'll keep Darnell Dockett one more year and we'll bring in a guy in the third or fourth round. So I think it's going to be offense early and then defense for depth.
What's your take on that, Ben?
That's pretty much how I see it too. There will definitely be a couple picks on defense. You look, maybe defensive line is a possibility. Safety is an obvious need, and then I would like to say in the first couple of rounds, if you have a shot at a premier outside linebacker prospect, you're going to be very tempted to take that shot on him because obviously we don't have the premier pass rusher. We never have. Maybe we never will. I don't know at this point, but I definitely think that's a possibility. But if you miss out on that position early, I think we have 9 outside linebackers on the team right now. You got the 4 people that are actually able to play. There's a guy on the PUP. There's a guy on the practice squad. You got 3 on injured reserve. So we have a logjam there. We have plenty of depth. It's just finding that star player. But beyond that, yeah, I think Arians has been pulling his hair out to get his offense going, and he doesn't have a lot of hair left to lose, let's be honest. So I think it's going to be offense early and often. Wide receiver is definitely a possibility. Tight end is definitely going to happen, at least one. O-line needs to be taken care of. QB is a possibility. I mean, really, just every position, I think, on offense is going to be in play in this draft. So,
all right, final question. 2014. Carson Palmer, is he going to be starting for the Arizona Cardinals? Is he going to be suit up for the Cardinals? Now, keep in mind, he will have about a $10 million cap hit if he is let go. If his contract was set up to be kind of a two-year deal. Ben, yes or no? He's back with the team next year.
I'm going to say no. They don't really have another answer as a starter, but the mistakes he's making are too elementary, I think, and yeah, the contract is really expensive, and it's really easy to get out of it. So I'm gonna go with no.
Okay, Seth.
If they don't draft a guy in the first round, then unfortunately, yes. But I think Arians knows that unless he makes the playoffs this year, he can't afford another year of Carson Palmer. So he needs to do something to kind of get his guy in here. And I know Palmer was his veteran guy, but get his guy in here and kind of get a start on the future for himself and this team.
All right. There you have it. We've got neither one believes that really he'll be back next year. Seth hedging it a little bit, saying it depends on who they draft in the first round. We are out of time, Arizona Cardinals fans. We thank you for listening as always. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess. We have Seth and Ben and Seth on the line as well, wishing you a good night. The plan is to be back on the air Thursday night or Friday morning recorded with a guest from Battle Red Blog, our Houston, Texas site. So have a good night, guys. Thanks for the show. Have a wonderful night, and go Cardinals.
Thanks, Jeff.
Night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.